no
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show. This week, our hour of radio drama begins with the Green Hornet. We'll hear The Number Is Up, his story from January 31st, 1942. After that, it's the Columbia Workshop and William Ireland's Confession, their episode from October 19th, 1939.
The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America.
With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reed, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reed as he races toward another thrilling adventure in the story, Reservoir for Murder. The Green Hornet strikes again. Of the new city reservoir. As he walked across the cluttered ground toward the concrete abutments, he noticed that the men seemed to be especially busy with one section of the retaining wall.
Looks like something's cooking over there, and it ain't good.
Hey, buddy.
Well, you better not go any further, mister. That section's
for me. It's okay. I'm a reporter from the Daily Sentinel. Here's my press card.
Sure, only
you... Forget it. My insurance company says I can take all the risks I want, and they'll pay all. So why should I worry? Where's the phone around here?
The only ones in the construction shop.
Never mind, buddy. You warned me. You did your duty.
Hey, wait.
Time, time. Reporters wait for no man. I'm climbing that scaffold. I want to see this with my own eyes. They built this reservoir with knitting needles instead of T-squares. The Sentinel's going to hear about it. Hey, what's happening to that scaffold?
The whole section's going to cave in. Did you see that?
Did I see it? Holy mackerel, the piece of concrete is big as a truck. Gangway, I got to get that phone.
Sentinel Publisher's Office.
Casey, this is Lowry. Where's the boss?
What's the matter, Lowry? You sound excited.
It's the reservoir. Give me the boss. It's coming down around my ears.
Casey, is that Lowry?
Yes, it's Lowry, Mr. Reed.
All right. Hello. Hello, Lowry.
Boss, that's it with the McCoy. One section is caving in.
The reservoir going? This case got Gunnigan.
Yes, sir.
Gunnigan.
Here he is.
Gunnigan, Reed talking. I've got Lowry on the phone. Construction wreck at the reservoir. I have a rewrite man caught in. You got it?
Got it.
Okay, Lowry, you give it to the rewrite man.
Okay, boss.
Can you see what's going on?
Sure, I have a ringside seat. I'm in the construction shack. I can see from the window. Okay, Mr. Reed.
All set, Lowry. The rewrite man's listening. Go ahead.
I'm about 200 yards away from the concrete walls. They've been showing up one section because it had a crack in it, but it isn't a crack anymore. Hold it. There goes another chunk. You hear that? Man, it's a lucky thing there wasn't any water in that reservoir yet. Half the people in Maple Valley be getting their feet wet up to their ears. The rest of the concrete seems to be okay, but that one section... Yeah, they're pulling the men away from it. Guess it's going to cave. They're running like this. Looks like it's going to be more than 1 month before the governor dedicates the Maple Valley Reservoir project after all. There'll be an investigation. Hold it! Here comes the big one! 150 tons of concrete! Going! Going! Going!
later, darkness had fallen over the wreckage of the reservoir wall. Powerful lamps poured cones of light down as men worked to clear away the debris. And slipping quietly and unnoticed among the working men was Ed Lowry. He stayed out of the lighted areas as much as possible, but his sharp eyes saw everything there was to see.
Maybe I can dig up an angle on this. Concrete walls just don't fall down and go boom without a reason. Any concrete solid enough. Certainly feels that way on my feet. Hey, what's this? One of the sealed supports that was buried in it. Feels funny. It's got a sharp edge. Lowry, my friend, maybe you're onto something here. Now, where did I put those matches? Let's have a look at the edge of this girder. Come on, light. Come. Well, that's coming on the front page. No wonder that concrete wall caved in. Holy mackerel, this girder is... Hey, let go of me. What are you doing? What are you planning to... Oh!
Very amusing. Where's the boss?
Oh, I knew you'd try to fight somebody bigger than you someday. Or was it a whole gang?
Not Casey. It was one guy with a 10-ton blackjack in his fist.
Well, Lowry, so that's why you didn't come back to the office last night or phone in. Fighting, huh?
Holy mackerel, what kind of a reception is this? So help me, boss. I got this while I was on the job.
You did?
Sure. I was checking over that reservoir after dark. And just when I find something good, blam, some monkey jumps me and sends me to dreamland. Didn't wake up till this morning.
Well, you found something good. What do you mean?
What I said, boss. I found enough to prove that crash was no accident.
Good
crash. No accident?
No, sir. Not when the steel supports that are supposed to be embedded in that concrete are sawed halfway through.
What?
Yeah.
Gosh, Mr. Reed, and the whole state is blaming Jeff Thorndyke, saying that he's responsible.
Not if that concrete was deliberately weak.
It was, boss.
Well, Lowry, you're going back there. Miss Case, get a photographer to go back with Lowry and take pictures of that damage. Call the police.
Whoa, boss.
What?
No dice. You'd be wasting your time.
Don't be silly, Lowry. Why, it would make a front-page story that would scoop the town.
Hold on, Miss Case, just a moment. Go on, Lowry. We'd be wasting our time. Why?
Because the steel girders aren't there anymore.
Go on.
When I woke up, I started to look again. Boy, somebody cleared those girders out of there like Lewis took Bear. What good is a story without proof?
Now, gentlemen, this way, please.
Okay, Thorndyke, keep your chin up. I'm glad you're here, Reed. It's good to have someone backing me up. Senator's got the axe out for me. Can't say I blame him.
Caving wasn't your fault, Thorndyke.
Yes, I know the Senator.
It was, but someday we'll prove it.
I doubt very much if you can prove that, Reed.
Hello, Senator.
Hello. You may go, Miss Bradley.
Yes, sir.
Well, Thorndyke, as engineer in charge of that construction job, you've managed to put me in the soup. There's only one way I can satisfy the public. Come right to the point. Did you bring along your resignation?
I can't understand what went wrong.
I'm not interested in alibis. I'm interested in results. You didn't get them.
I understand. Here's my resignation.
Now, just a minute.
Yes?
The rat deserts the sinking ship.
Your bird's aimed at me, Reed.
It is?
I hit this department. I'm responsible for what happens.
You're also responsible for the men under you. Yet you're making Thorndyke the ghost.
I'm putting the blame where it belongs.
If you read the Sentinel, there might be some doubt that what happened was Thorndyke's fault.
Poppycock. The story cooked up to make circulation. Yellow journalism.
Not from the Sentinel, sir.
There's no proof. Your reporter made that story up, and you believe him.
I believed him, yes. But he didn't make it up. I know my reporter. And get this, Shevlin. The public has faith in the Sentinel, too.
There's no time for...
Which is just what I said. You're yapping about the interest of the public. Well, get this, Shepard. The Sentinel has a circulation that's almost as big as all the others combined. And this morning, after our story, our switchboard was flooded with phone calls.
Phone calls about what?
About the cave-in at the new reservoir. Shepard, if you're interested in public opinion, you might be interested to know that the public does believe that story in the Sentinel. At least enough so that they don't blame Thorndyke.
Well, is that true?
If you want a record of their names and address...
No, I don't doubt you. Thorndyke, this puts a different complexion on things.
Shevlin is always sensitive to public opinion, aren't you, Shevlin?
Senator, do you mean my resignation?
Yes, I'm not accepting it, Thorndike. There, in the wastebasket.
I don't know what to say.
Never mind. Just go ahead and make sure the job is finished. And finished right.
It'll be done right. I'm still puzzled about
what
I...
Jeff, let's go. Can't you see the senator wants to be alone, to eat his own words? Goodbye, Shoveler. Next time, don't be too anxious to throw out a good worker.
Goodbye, Senator. It'll be done right. I'll make sure it's done right.
Goodbye. Go ahead. Go ahead and finish that job. When it's done, I'll make absolutely sure if Thorndike loses his job. I'll make it positive.
Finish.
It better be.
fix everything. What the?
Excuse, please.
You were on the other side of the senator's car. Who are you?
Excuse, please. I'm very sorry. Mr. Britt, I come back to apartment at once. I tell you what I hear.
You don't know their plan?
No, sir.
Rain will fill up that reservoir pretty fast.
That is true. Rain continues. I think...
Kato, we've got to find out. Check the gas weapon and the Hornet mask.
It rained very hard, Mr.
That doesn't matter. Rain or no rain, the Green Hornet's going out on the Black Beauty.
A few minutes later, Britt Reed and his Filipino valet, Kato, stepped through a secret panel in Britt Reed's bedroom, then along a narrow passage built within the wall itself. Down narrow, creaking stairs that led around a corner and connected directly with another building on a little-used, dead-end side street. Seen from the street, this building looked deserted, empty like all the others. No one could guess that within its bleak walls stood the supercharged Black Beauty, streamlined car of the Green Hornet.
Go ahead, Kato. We're going to find this man, Bender. We'll get the answer.
Kato flipped on the headlights. A photoelectric cell registered the beam, started a small electric motor. Silently, a huge section of apparently solid wall swiveled upward. The sleek black car rolled into the street, turned and headed north toward Maple Valley. And behind it, the wall once more dropped into place.
You'll never know, Joe. Good night.
Pretty wet out.
Yeah, and it'll be a lot wetter, too. A lot wetter.
Just a minute, Bender.
Hey, what's the idea of bumping into a guy this way? Dark enough to black out it?
This is a gun in your ribs.
Hey, what is this, a stick-up? Who are you?
That mask. You're the Green Hornet.
Come with me, Bender.
What do you want?
Come with me. You're going to answer some questions.
Hotter upstate than it is here in the city, Senator.
Yes, Miss Bertie. I won't need you anymore tonight.
Yes, sir.
What's the matter with Bender? He's supposed to call me on my private phone. Water should be pouring into that reservoir. I want to know. I tried to get him myself. He isn't home. Private phone, that's it. Hello. Is this you, Bender?
Lord Shevlin.
Who is this? Bender, what? This number is private. You're making a mistake.
Bender's right here. It's no mistake. I know all about it, Shevlin.
About what?
The Maple Valley Reservoir. I want $10,000.
Who are you?
This is the Green Hornet.
The Green Hornet?
$10,000, your scheme blows up right in your face.
You can't bluff me.
Not a bluff. Remember, I've got Bender here. It wouldn't be hard to get him to talk. So make up your mind, Shevlin. $10,000,
all right.
Or you have it.
All right, at least I'm willing to talk to you about it.
That's more like it. Play nice and your apple cart may not be tipped over, huh? I'll meet you in the valley about a mile below the reservoir where Route 22 and Highway 16 split.
I know where.
Tomorrow night at 11. Be there, Shevlin. Don't forget.
Phone call, yes?
All set. Tomorrow night at 11. Where is Bender?
You give him gas from gun, Mr. Britt. He in his car, unconscious. What do we do between now and tomorrow night, please?
Can you take care of Bender?
Oh, I keep him unconscious till then, yes.
Good. I'll take the Black Beauty and head back to town. I want to be at the Sentinel tomorrow. I'll meet you at 11 in the evening.
Oh, where is meeting?
The junction of Route 22 and State Highway 16 in the valley here, Kato. And take care of Bender.
Another day. Hey, what time you got
that, Casey?
5:30. Will you come along, Mr. Thorndyke, to Mr. Reed's office?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Nice guy, Thorndyke. I like him.
I wonder if he'll get shoveling stuff.
Well, I hope so. Somebody ought to. Still raining.
All day and since yesterday.
This rain has me a little worried, Reed. The Maple Valley Reservoir.
Oh, I'll be foolish, Thorndyke. You have men up there, haven't you?
Well, yes, but if something unforeseen
occurs. Oh, forget it.
Say, Lowry.
What is, boss?
I've got to head for home. I have an appointment tonight. Oh, will you and Miss Case keep Mr. Thorndyke from getting the jitters? Now that his work's done, he has plenty of time for worrying, so keep him occupied. You might show him around the Sentinel. Perhaps he's never seen a great newspaper at work.
Well, Mr. Thorndyke, you've seen everything.
Listen to that thunder. Still raining.
Give up, Casey. The guy's hopeless. Here it is, 10:30 at night. Outside of eating dinner, we've been giving him a conductor tour of the Sentinel, and all he thinks about is the weather. I tell you, Casey, that...
Oh, Mr. Thorndyke, I've been calling you from Senator Shevlin's office all evening. I couldn't get you, so I finally came over.
Miss Darcy, what's the matter?
I don't know exactly. A phone call came for the Senator. It wasn't on his private line, so I took it. Mr. Thorndyke, it was a man reminding the Senator to be at the junction of Route 22 and Highway 6 here at 11 tonight.
The junction... In the valley?
Yes, and to bring $10,000. But the Senator was gone already. I couldn't tell him.
Oh, sister, calm down. You're all excited.
Why shouldn't I be? The man who called was the Green Hornet. The Hornet?
Holy mackerel, this is a case for the police.
The police?
Sure, hold on the fort, Casey. And tell Gunnigan to get set for a page one scoop. 11 o'clock, huh? We might not make it by 11, but we'll be there soon after. Come on, Thorndyke.
Money talks.
Yes. Here you are.
Thanks. Two doctor counts, but if it isn't all here...
It's there.
Good. I told your secretary...
What's it? My secretary.
Yes, I called this evening. Just wanted to remind you. I got no answer on that phone.
She doesn't know I'm mixed up in anything crooked. You ruined me.
Oh, now isn't that too bad? Now that I think of it, she was a little surprised. But that's your tough luck, Shevlin. I got the money and that...
Carl, come here. Carl. That must be the police. Get out of here. Get out.
I will shove him, but first...
No, don't shoot me. Don't
get rattled.
Yes, you shut
it. For you, Bunder, I'll just use my fist.
Miss Cato, don't keep till the police arrive. Remind me to send this $10,000 to the Red Cross, will you? Let's get to the Black Beauty.
But, Mr. Britt, I don't understand.
I don't understand what, Cato?
Even when police get here, even when they find those two, what good is that? If not possible, they prove they are criminals.
Don't worry about that, Cato.
But I do worry. How police know unless Senator or Senate talks? They not talk.
I said, don't worry. Let's go, Cato.
There's a car.
Shevlin's car. It must be him.
How easy it's dark. Let me in there first.
How about some light, Flannery?
There you are, Lowry. Hey, the Senator's out cold. I guess the Hornet beat us to the punch.
That's just right. He could be.
What are you doing here?
Hello, Mr. Thorndyke. I ain't doing nothing.
Oh, nothing. We come all the way out here into the valley to catch the Green Hornet, and what happens? Nothing.
The Hornet was here, Mr. He was here. What did you say? Are we in the valley?
Yeah.
Right below the Maple Valley Reservoir?
Yeah, of course, Bender.
How long's it been raining?
Since yesterday, coming down in buckets.
What's the matter with you, Bender? Oh, poor fellow must be out of his head.
Since yesterday, we'll be drowned. That Carroll Creek wall is in a cave any minute. Now let me out of here.
Yes.
No, it's true, I tell you. If we stay here, we'll be drowned. Mr. Thorndyke, we'll drown. Now listen, you've got to believe me. I was being paid by Shevlin. I saw them steal support.
You what?
Yeah. I saw it all of them.
Then I poured the cement in so it wouldn't be seen. That dam won't hold, I tell you.
You'll get jail for this, mister, and Shevlin
too. Who cares about jail? Well, I'll drown, I tell you. Now let me out.
Good Lord, Lowry, he knows what he's talking about. We've got to get to the dam. We've got to open the emergency sluices and drain the water off. If we're too late, the whole wall will go. The valley will be flooded. People will die in their sleep. Women and children, the town. We've got to get there at once.
Yeah, Mr. Thorndyke. I've been trying to get loose for 10 minutes. Can you imagine some guy comes busting here wearing a mask? I tried to stop him, but he opened all the emergency sluices.
What? Did you say he opened the sluices?
Yeah. The water's dropped 2 feet already.
Davis, that man saved the valley. The concrete wall would have caved any minute.
You mean he... Well, he was wearing a mask. And that note, he left that note on the table.
Oh, it says it.
I've got it.
Thorndyke, it says, I may be a crook, but I don't go in for mass murder. It isn't signed, but it doesn't have to be.
Lowry, listen. It was the Green Hornet.
Dramas created by George W. Trendle are a copyrighted feature of The Green Hornet, Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious.
Gangbusters, The Crusade Against Crime, returns to the air next Saturday night, October 21st. Here's a program that has aided in the capture of more than 100 wanted criminals. See how shrewd, clever police work caught the man who thought nothing could stop him, and learn that crime never pays. Be sure to listen to the first exciting case in the new Gangbusters series, The Crusade Against Crime, over this station next Saturday night, October 21st.
This evening, the Columbia Workshop presents a dramatized treatment of the story of William Ireland, the notorious forger of Shakespeare manuscripts 150 years ago. The play is the work of Arthur Miller, and is his first radio effort. It is entitled William Ireland's Confession.
My name is William Ireland. I lived my life in London, the city on the River Thames. I come to you now, a voice, as is fitting, for my bones are buried these 100 years. 100 years, and still there is not one man in all the world to render homage to my immortal name. Chaucer is revered, Aeschylus, Spenser, Shakespeare. But William Ireland, the greatest genius of them all, is rotting in his grave, disgraced and unremembered. Listen and hear how unjustly I was condemned. And for what? For writing at the age of 19 a tragedy judged by the greatest critics of my time as fine a play as Shakespeare himself had ever written. But wait, we'll start at the beginning and let you judge for yourselves. It was in the year 1793. With my father Samuel, a famous collector of antique books, I was returning home from the annual Shakespeare Jubilee at Stratford-on-Avon. My father was in search of a paper, any paper, so long as Shakespeare's signature was written on it. I was 18 then, young, and as the carriage near our house on North.
I still maintain it. Somewhere in England, perhaps in some peasant shack, perhaps in a castle closet, there's a bundle of Shakespeare's correspondence gathering dust. And by the crown, I'll find that bundle, if I have to spend my life in the search.
I could help you, Father.
You? Why, William, you haven't the intelligence. At least, not enough to make a book collector of you.
Yes, Father.
Oh, he thinks I'm so dull and he's so smart. But wait. Wait, Father, you'll see. I'll be a great man someday. A great poet. And people will come from miles around to throw flowers at my grave, and you'll be...
Well, can't you think of anything to say? Why are you always so blank-looking? I'm beginning to believe what Mr. Wyatt said.
What did Mr. Wyatt say?
He thinks you're an idiot, William.
Yes, Father. Father, I have a surprise for you.
Well?
While you were searching that house in Stratford for the Shakespeare papers this morning, I wrote a little poem.
Well, that's lovely.
Here, I'll read it to you.
Now, William, for the last time I tell you, the Lord only knows what you're good for, but it's certainly not to write verses. Now put it away and don't bother me again with your drivel.
It's not drivel.
Oh, now you question my taste, eh?
I'm a poet, Father,
keep
and I'm...
quiet, your voice annoys me.
Joseph!
Sit down, you fool.
Joseph, stop the carriage!
Oh, what new way have you come upon now to make an ass of yourself?
Father, I can't bear any more of this today. I'm a very sensitive young man. I'll walk the rest of the way home. And mark you, sir, what I've said. You'll come to know my value, and very soon. Good afternoon.
His value, huh? Home, Joseph. How any son of mine could be such an ignorant
idiot. Imbecile, idiot. I can't bear it any longer. I'm smarter than he. I'm smarter than any boy my age. I know human nature like Shakespeare did. I'm a poet. Yes, a poet. A prodigy. Idiot. Imbecile. He must learn to respect me. There must be a way to show my value. He must learn to admire me. He must. He must.
1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, I walked the London streets, until at 5 o'clock I found myself in Harrod's bookshop, idly fingering through some old volumes. I came upon a book covered with dust, many, many years of dust.
Invisible Sun prayer book, and I found it. Oh, but if he doesn't believe it really was Elizabeth, I'll run away. Ah, old Harrod's pulling your leg, William. He might say that and laugh again. Let's see. The Queen's arms are on it, all right. And the dedication... The dedication? Who would ever know the difference if I should rip out the dedication page, copy it on some old...
Hear it. Listen. Listen how it began and then judge whether or not I did it for money or a father's love. The following day, I went as usual to Mr. Bingley's law office, where I was a clerk. In the files, there were many contracts dating back hundreds of years. I took one, snipped off the bottom, which was blank, and on it, on this old paper, I copied out in marble fluid the author's dedication in the prayer book. Dated it, 1591. That night, striving desperately to keep calm, I walked into my father's library and found him examining one of his rare volumes.
Father?
Eh? Oh, William, I told you 100 times to knock.
Oh, I have something.
What is it? Well, what are you staring at?
Father, I've made a marvelous find.
Oh, what, one of your old poems?
Oh, I dare not show it. He'll know.
William, if you don't say something soon, I'll lose my temper.
Well, I've found Queen Elizabeth's prayer book.
Oh? Let me see it. Thank you. Well, not quite, I fear, William.
Oh, but look, the Queen's arms on the cover.
That's true. Might have been Elizabeth, but... Hold on, what's this?
Oh, yes, you see that? It's a letter to the Queen in the author's very handwriting.
Let's see it in the light, I... You believe you found something, William? Look at that, 1591. 200 years old and still clear as though it were written yesterday. There's that old paper for you. Nothing like it today. Well, thank you, son. It's a very nice item. You've pleased me no end.
Have I, Father?
Indeed you have. I should like to make up for the way
Oh, that's all right, Father. I'll look about more in the shops. I'll find lots of things you'll like.
That's very good of you.
Oh, you'll be proud of me, Father. I'll find the rarest things.
William.
Yes?
You've made a good find, and I do think you might be able to help me. I'm not a poor man anymore, and I've one of the best collections in London. But I shall not be at rest until I have in my hands what to me is the greatest find of all, the signature of William Shakespeare. Son... For that, I'd give half my life. Shakespeare's autograph on a piece of paper, and I could die happily tomorrow.
I could scarcely believe it. Here he ink was hardly dry, and he was certain it was 200 years old. But my father's memory was short, and in a few weeks the old jeering began again. Day after day, he kept taunting me about my verses. Taunting, taunting. Until one day, November 1794, I happened on Dr. Johnson's edition of Shakespeare. In it was printed the facsimile of a lost deed drawn up between Shakespeare and his friend, John Heming, for a property in Blackfriars. The original, if it could be found, would be priceless. On old paper, I copied out that facsimile, and when I'd finished it, it seemed so perfect a copy that I felt indeed like that greatest of poets whose name I was about to sign. And sign I did, William Shakespeare.
Pass the butter, William. William.
What?
You have the most annoying habit of sleeping with your eyes open. Pass the butter, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
I'd be mad to show it to him. He's sure to find some mistake, and then I'd have to run away. I'll run. No, he'll believe. He must believe.
Aren't you eating tonight? William.
Yes, Father.
If you can't look more intelligent, at least during dinner you'll eat in the kitchen. You positively annoy me.
Father,
you needn't
I have...
speak. Just don't look so stupid.
Stupid, eh? Stupid? You'll change your tune.
Father.
What is it now?
I've found Shakespeare's signature.
William, you don't dare trifle with me.
Here it is.
What is this one? Why, hold it for me, my hand is shaking.
Yes, Father. It's the famous lost deed to Blackfriars. You see? Shakespeare's signature. Now, what do you think of that?
What if you threw it? Oh, Lord, no.
William, the ambition of my life. I'm touching the signature of William Shakespeare. I'm touching it. William, my boy.
And I found it. I found it myself.
Where? God bless me. Did you buy it?
Well, no, I didn't buy it.
Quickly, you fool.
And how did you come to get it?
Where?
Come, you can tell your father.
A gentleman.
A gentleman?
Well, yes, you see, 3 weeks ago when I was at dinner at Mr. Mitchell's house, there was a gentleman present who took a liking to me immediately, for we both shared each other's interest in old books. In fact, by the end of the evening, he had invited me out to his country house, where he promised to show me some very rare manuscripts. Well, yesterday I went out to his place...
What in all the world has this to do with the...
You ask me what it has to do with it, you...
William!
Why, Father, here you are looking all over Christendom for Shakespeare's manuscripts, and this very gentleman has a trunk full of them.
Good Lord. Who is this man?
Well, Mr. H.
Mr. H? But what's his name?
I can't tell you.
But you must. I'll buy every scrap he has.
He won't sell, Father.
Then how did you get this?
Don't you see, Father? He'll give to the world through my hands whatever I desire. Any one of his wonderful papers. But I must never, never, never tell his name to a living soul.
Then you must certainly have made a grand impression on the gentleman.
Oh, and he thinks I'm quite talented, too. He says my verses are just beautiful.
Well, I'll have to look them over again. And have you seen any of the other manuscripts besides this?
Seen them? I've read them.
Which ones has he got?
Well, there's perhaps 50 notes lying around from Shakespeare to Southampton and Shakespeare to Heming and Heming to Shakespeare.
Marvelous. And the plays, too.
Plays? Why, no sooner did I open the trunk, but under a love letter from Shakespeare to Anne Hathaway.
A love letter?
Yes. And under it was, guess what?
What?
The manuscript of King Lear in Shakespeare's handwriting.
William! Oh, I can't listen to any more now. Ring for Joseph, please.
Yes, Father. Are you ill, Father?
Ill. I never felt better.
You rang, sir?
Bring the carriage round, Joseph, and hurry.
Very good, sir.
William, you could have whatever pleases you in my collection. I'm going now to see Francis Webb of the College of Heralds to make absolutely certain that this deed is authentic.
College of Heralds?
But isn't your own judgment enough, Father?
In such a case, no. And, William, when will you have the manuscript of Lear for me?
Well, I'll have it in...
You fool.
About... 2 weeks.
That's fine. Then I'll invite Dr. Parr, Dr. Wharton, Mr. Wyatt, and James Boswell to examine.
All those scholars.
Very good, Father. I'm not a bad collector, am I?
Bad? Oh, why, son, your name will ring round the world for this. Wait up for me, eh?
Wait up? Oh, Father, I've prayed for that.
Yes, my boy. Everything is changed now, William. Good night.
I'll be waiting.
College of Heralds pronounced my document authentic. Within 24 hours, every paper in London was praising my name. I set to work on the original manuscript of King Lear, and I worked hard, for until then, I had only copied well. This was my King Lear, a new play stripped of all the coarse crudities which the critics of my day so loved to condemn in Shakespeare. The day after I had presented the manuscripts to my father, the scholars sat listening to Boswell reading Lear. And as he came to the final speech, my heart stopped. For that speech I had written myself from start to finish.
Thanks, sir. But I go to that unknown land that chains each pilgrim faster than its soil. By living men most shunned, most dreaded. Still, my good master this same journey took. He calls me. I am content and straight obey. Then farewell, world. The busy scene is done. Kent lived most true. Kent dies most like a man. Yes.
Well, gentlemen, what is your verdict?
My opinion? A great crime has been committed.
Mr. Boswell!
Yes, gentlemen, a crime. For 200 years, the public has come to know Shakespeare, whose plays were spotted by the coarseness and near atheism of a minor poet. Today is revealed a cleaner, simpler, God-loving Shakespeare.
Good Lord, what's Boswell doing? Why, he's kneeling before the play.
I now kiss the glorious relics of our bard, and thanks to God that I have lived to see them. Forgive me, gentlemen, I kneel. For that writing is divine.
My sentiments precisely. Why, I could hardly believe it was the same Lear. Isn't it so, Dr. Parr?
Oh, most definitely. A newer, grander Shakespeare.
Why, the sheer beauty,
Mr. Restrain yourself, Wyatt.
Our humble thanks go to Master William for his service to English letters and mankind.
I am a genius. If I can write that, why not a whole play? A tragedy in blank verse. And that's it with Shakespeare. Why not? I can do it. I can do anything. I'm a genius.
Gentlemen, I have a wonderful announcement. By the winter, I shall have for my father a heretofore unknown play by William Shakespeare.
William?
A new play?
What's it about? Well, I'm in honor bound not to divulge any more, but Mr. H. has promised it to me, and according to his estimate, it is so beautiful, so perfectly written in character and invention.
And immediately next morning, I began work on the new play. From Holinshed's Chronicles, I took the story of King Vortigern. The story I had heard tell was one of Shakespeare's favorites. But a week later, I sat writing in my office. I was summoned home by my father. And when I arrived, I was stricken with fear. For there in the parlor stood Edmund Malone, the foremost Shakespeare scholar in Britain and the country's sharpest pamphleteer.
Where's your son, Mr. Ireland? Edmund Malone is no man to be kept waiting.
Father?
William, come here.
What's happened?
Not a whit more than you've caused to happen, Milarkey.
William, you've taken advantage of your father.
But why, Mr. Wyatt?
Why? The spleen of him to ask why.
Just a moment, Malone. I'll speak to him. William, some time ago you brought me the lease to Blackfriars signed by Shakespeare and John Heming.
Yes, sir.
Keep quiet. Now today, these gentlemen show me a document just recently discovered with the signature of John Heming on it. A signature which is absolutely different from the one of John Heming's on your Blackfriars lease. Account for this, William.
You're intimating that my John Heming signature is false?
Well, Bushy is a bright one, isn't he? Yes, William, my lad, the goose is hung. We have the authentic John Heming signature, and yours is as false as the rest of your documents. Now, me poetaster, where's your tongue?
Why?
What can I say? Oh, quick.
Mr. Wyatt. May I see that document?
Well, William, what is the reason for these two signatures being different?
Well, the reason? Very simple.
Aha!
Surely Mr. Malone knows that there were two John Hemings.
Two?
Yes, two. A tall one and a short one.
A tall one and a... Do you realize that it's Edmund Malone you're lying to?
I'm not lying. The John Heming who signed my Blackfriars lease was the short man, and the John Heming who signed your document, Mr. Malone, was the tall one, and... And that's why the two signatures are different. And you know how I'll prove it?
I haven't the faintest notion, me blarney bird.
If you'll be good enough to wait half an hour, I'll go right now to Mr. H and bring you back letters written and signed by the tall John Hemming. You're John Hemming.
That's fair enough, Malone.
He should have been throttled at birth.
I raced to my office, sat at my desk, composed four short letters, and signed them all John Hemming, the real John Hemming, whose signature I had memorized from that short glance at Mr. Wyatt's document. In half an hour, I was back home, the notes hardly dry, stuffed into my pocket.
Well, gentlemen, here you are. Four letters written and signed by the tall John Hemming. Compare these with the signature on your document, Mr. Wyatt, and you'll see the same man wrote them all.
Is it true, Wyatt?
I'm afraid the boy's right, Malone. There must have been two John Hemmings.
Well, Malone, what have you to say?
What is there to say, Mr. Ireland? The signature appeared to be identical, that's true. But I must still suspect them, along with the rest of your son's discoveries.
But why?
Why, my dear sir? That so-called original King Lear is an unmitigated piece of trash.
But the British colors...
What? Those boobies? Why, if you brought them diddly-diddly-dumpkin over Shakespeare's name, they'd call it a masterpiece. But not Edmund Malone, for I'm a Shakespeare scholar, not a Shakespeare worshipper. And if your son should bring me 1,000 documents written like that play, I'd still call him a dupe or a forger. And until William Ireland own up to this outrageous hoax, you'll find Edmund Malone burning up pinpoints to expose him. Long live William Shakespeare, gentlemen, but only figuratively, and I propose to see to that. Good night, me gullibles, and may the best man win.
Oh, Malone, Malone, Edmund Malone. There was an Irishman. That night he began to write his exposure, and I really set to work in earnest on King Vortigern, the lost tragedy of Shakespeare. It was a race, for I wanted my play to be seen and judged on the stage before Malone could prejudice the public against it. But Malone was the first to finish. And the night his exposure came off the press, my father rushed into the house waving the cursed pamphlet in his hand.
William, I'm disgraced. Finished.
Is it very bad?
Look at it. He'll convince the world I'm a mountebank with this.
They won't believe it.
They're believing his slander right now. I was laughed at on the street.
Let them laugh. Wait till they see King Vortigern on the stage.
I can't wait. I've got to show absolute proof or I'm finished. Bring me Mr. H.
I can't do that.
William, bring me Mr. H, I say.
But I promised him, Father. Doesn't my word of honor mean anything to you?
Take on your word. I'll shut Malone's mouth or my business is ruined. What fool will buy my antiques as genuine if I'm not above palming off forged manuscripts?
Father, I have an idea. A splendid idea. All the great men of letters, men like Dr. Parr and Boswell and the Prince of Wales, they believe in my discoveries, don't they?
Oh, what of it?
Why not draw up a certificate for them to sign, saying they're convinced the documents are Shakespeare's?
And they did sign. The greatest names in England affirmed that they believed my works were Shakespeare's. Is that a smile I sense on your faces? You doubt me. I call on the spirit of James Boswell. Did you believe... James Boswell, you on that northern star, did you believe?
I believe.
And you, Henry Pye, poet laureate of England.
I.
The Duke of Somerset.
I.
William Pitt.
I.
Edmund Burke.
I.
The Prince of Wales.
I.
Yes, they believed. They and tens of others just as great. And they silenced Malone sufficiently to get the lost tragedy produced. And on the night of the first performance, the Drury Lane Theatre was sold out from floor to roof. The audience sat enthralled by my work of genius. Until as the last act was drawing to a close,
full 50 breathless bodies struck my sight, and some with gaping mouths did seem to mock me, whilst others, smiling in cold death itself, scoffingly
Father.
Bade me
Father.
Look on that which soon would
something
wrench from off my brow
yes, I've been hearing
this
it.
Sacred
Wyatt,
crown
what shall we do?
And make me too
I wouldn't put it past
like
alone to have organized a riot.
And with
dear,
rude
keep
laughter
calm, Sir Boswell,
and
let's hope only
tricks.
King Vortigern ends
thou
in pleasure tonight.
Thou clap the rattling fingers to thy sides, and when this solemn mockery is ended with icy hands,
solemn mockery indeed,
Shakespeare's turning in his grave.
His balloon and his henchmen.
Duck your head. Duck. They're throwing food.
To the dressing rooms. Hurry. Out of the way there. Let us through. Out of the way, you bully.
There we are. Oh, phew. Well, what do you think of that wire?
Oh, Edmund Malone will never call off his vandals. Until Mr. H comes forward, and until then, you can't put on another performance on the London stage.
You're right, Wyatt. William, you're going to bring Mr. H home tomorrow night before the next performance.
I can't do it.
You will do it. By George, I'll whip you.
Now, there he is.
Dr. Ward, gentlemen.
We won't stand for this any longer.
Gentlemen.
We're becoming the laughingstock of London.
Where is Mr. H? We demand to see him.
Gentlemen, gentlemen. I've just been discussing Mr. H with my son. And he agrees that the gentleman can no longer have any honest reason for concealing his identity. Isn't that so, William? William!
Yes, Father.
So at 5 tomorrow afternoon, you're invited to gather at my house on Norfolk Street. Mr. H will arrive and make himself known.
What time have you, Dr. Wharton?
Just on 5, Dr. Parr. He should be here now.
Look at Mr. Ireland at the window. Poor man, he must be on edge.
Can't blame him. I'm not the cold fish today myself.
Who do you suppose Mr. H could be? I wouldn't be surprised if he turned out to be the Prince of Wales.
A carriage. There's a carriage slowing down.
But it's stopping in front of the house. It's he. It's Mr. H.
Look how he covers his face with his coat. I'll wager it's the prince himself.
Joseph will let him in.
I'm shaking like a leaf.
Here he comes.
Good afternoon, sir. Good afternoon. Won't you let the servants have your coat? I say, sir, won't you remove... William!
Yes, Father, it's William.
But where is Mr. H?
He's right here.
Young man, are you mad?
Gentlemen, I am Mr. H.
I am
Mr. H.
But who gave you the Shakespeare manuscripts?
No one. I wrote them myself. I tell you, I wrote them all. Stop laughing.
And the tragedy of Vortigern 2, I suppose.
Vortigern 2 from cover to cover. You see, Father, I am a genius. Stop laughing. Stop it. Stop it, I say.
Keep quiet, you idiot. To expect men like these to believe that you could write such masterful things? You, a stupid, ignorant feather brain?
Father, I... Very well, then. I'll show you. Here's the same paper the tragedy of Vortigern was written on. And here is the pen it was written with. And this is the very ink I used. The ink you all swore was 200 years old. Here, watch closely. And in the twinkling of an eye, the signature of William Shakespeare.
Law. It's perfect.
Oh, here. The signature of John Hemming. Well?
Incredible. It's utterly incredible.
Is that enough, my dear experts? Or shall I pen you a little love note, or perhaps a scene of my new play?
Oh,
or...
you blackguard.
Forger.
Hanging's too good for you.
Hanging? Why, gentlemen, aren't my writings as beautiful now as they were an hour ago when they were Shakespeare's? Come, Mr. Boswell, you called my Lear divine. And you, Dr. Wharton, you judged my works glorious.
William, shut your mouth.
Oh, I'm sorry for you, Father. For you, I am sorry, but it's all your own fault.
But I would have read your verses if...
And you would have called them drivel, and so would you, gentlemen. But as soon as that drivel became 200 years old and was signed by a great name, you sank to your knees before it. So, if an idiot can give the scholar some advice, sit you down again and study your Shakespeare. For if you knew your business, Shakespeare would be Shakespeare and William Ireland great. Good night, and forgive me, Father.
That they never forgave me. No, after that, whatever I wrote, they ridiculed into oblivion. And why? Because I had kicked pomposity square in the belly, and never was that to be forgiven. I ask no favor but justice. Justice for William Ireland. My great works are forgotten. I am dust in a pauper's grave. I call to you from the starry heavens. Do justice to William Ireland.
Methinks thou dost protest too much.
Who's that? Who said that?
Surely you know me, Mr. Ireland.
Shakespeare.
Indeed. Johnston's up there on yonder cloud. He's still laughing. Let's visit him. Come.
Thank you.
There's something that's been troubling me. Do you recall that speech in Hamlet? To be or not to be? Something like that.
Why, of course.
Well, I've been wondering. Do you think it's too long? Or perhaps if I rearrange the scene...
The Columbia Workshop has presented William Ireland's Confession by Arthur Miller. This was Mr. Miller's first radio play. In tonight's cast, young William Ireland was played by Ian Martin. Dead Ireland by Alfred Shirley. Samuel Ireland, Cecil Humphreys. Edmund Malone, Charles Derwent. Boswell was Eustace Wyatt. Dr. Parr, J.P. Wilson. Dr. Wyatt, Horace Braham. Dr. Wharton, Burford Hampton. Shakespeare, Lowell Gilmore, and Joseph, Ed Broadley. The entire production was under the direction of Brewster Morgan. Next week, the workshop will present an original piece in the form of a modern fable titled A Letter from Above by Elizabeth and Ben Vine. These also are new names on the workshop schedule. Many listeners in our regular Thursday evening audience will be glad to hear that an anthology of workshop plays has recently been published by Whittlesey House of the firm of McGraw-Hill. The book is called Columbia Workshop Plays and is available at your local bookstore. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's the Relic Radio Show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from The Green Hornet, Columbia Workshop, past episodes of this podcast, and all the others at relicradio.com. Our Shoutcast stream is available there as well, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the Relic Radio shows, give that button a click. Your support is how this is all made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have, and thanks for joining me today. Talk again next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.